Hello, Bill Diamond, John, Bobby, and the others on or listening to the Corn Belt Hour. It's a wonderful thrill for me to speak to you directly from the Western Front, where so many of your loved ones are writing one of the great chapters of military history, and where so much happened this week. Before I turn to farm topics, and better still to the farm boys I plan to interview, I'll report my impressions of the historic Battle of Nuremberg won late yesterday by our 7th Army Forces, a battle from which I've just returned after seeing much of the fighting and other sights I'll long remember. With Sid Olson, Life and Time correspondent, I reached the suburbs of the famous Nazi Party shrine the day our troops first fought their way in. Roads were still mined and blocked, and some strafing was in progress, so we could not get very close. Nevertheless, we got to visit many Midwestern men in assembly areas, at gun positions, and elsewhere. That night, we did not sleep very soundly. Our bullets were in a little house near the edge of a forest where some of our big guns were located. All up through the night, they poured volleys of big stuff into the big city where Nazi SS troopers were making a senseless last stand. I got up and, on pulling the blackouts aside, saw artificial moonlight being used by our forces. Those bright beams of light against the night sky, together with brilliant bursts from shells, flashing tracers, and flares from fires in the city, plus the constant thunder of the 105 and our ACAC as it went into action against Jerry Plains, made for a memorable night and morning. Fanatical resistance that following day held up our troops and prevented us from getting farther than to the city's outskirts. And that was enough, considering the bodies and carnage all about. We got to see more of our men, however, and had lunch with the general. And that evening, thanks to Sergeant Warren Spear, a Madison County farmer, I was with our troops in a nearby forest. So it was a big day anyway. That night, there was more shelling, and some of the resistance cracked. In house-to-house fighting, our men went down to the wall surrounding the old city, now a Nazi fortress. Olson and I went only as far as it was considered safe. En route, we saw the huge stadium, the unfinished Nazi party hall, the march field, and the huge arena, where Nazis, nearly a half million strong, used to hail Hitler as he screamed out his doctrines of hate. The place is full of shell holes now. And we saw much other evidence of the fate these fanatics had chosen to heap on themselves. Section after section bombed out or shelled into ruins. Finally, we reached our destination, a regimental command post, where the man I wanted to see was at work, and where we could watch and hear the mad pattern of war. With a wire recorder set up near a durable-looking building, we interviewed our man. I know you'll find his remarks of interest, and perhaps you can hear some of the real sound effects during the course of the broadcast. From where I am, I can see just a part of this city, a small part of it, but just empty shells of buildings are all that are left to show there for Hitler's stupidity. And I can see, too, in a nearby building, apparently an old warehouse, where everything is just pretty well gone, including a lot of burned-out vehicles. Right near us here, a first aid post, an ambulance is standing by, and so are some of the medics. Right around us, quite a number of our GIs. Some of them have been up on the line a little earlier. I'd like to take a moment now and say that we have our wire recorder at a point where the 3rd Battalion of the 180th Regiment with the 45th Division of our 7th Army is headquartering. This battalion is commanded by an Iowa man, Lieutenant Colonel Edward Byrd of Des Moines. Quite naturally, I'm more than delighted to meet Colonel Byrd and to see the grand job he's doing here. He's one of Iowa's best-known Army men, having fought through some of the bitterest battles in North Africa, Sicily, Italy, and more recently as commander of this unit in France and into Germany. He's won many citations, but of all his recognitions, none can be more significant than the place he holds in the hearts of his men. They look upon him as the greatest kind of a leader, not only because of his personal courage and because he's up with these men on the lines a lot of the time, but also for his keen tactical ability. His assignments have been among the difficult ones. In the thick of it, around Wimau, where they bumped into six mountain SS troops, and then at the secret line spearheading the Rhine crossing, and now here in Nuremberg. Colonel Byrd just came in a moment ago from up front, and I'd like to say that the board on which he carried his maps shows a nice little nick. Colonel Byrd, you might tell us how that nick came in, that board.
Well, I was standing up forward this morning talking to one of the company commanders, figuring our route out forward to the next objective, and all of a sudden we heard a crack, looked down, and I had a hole through my map board.
Apparently something that was coming from some of those maps.
That's right.
Colonel, I should have said first that it's a real pleasure to see you again, to have one of our Des Moines men with us here on the air, and we know, of course, that a lot of your friends are listening in back home, and they, like the rest of us around here, want to know how this battle here in Nuremberg is going.
Well, it's coming along pretty good right now. You know, you can't beat this American soldier. He's got lots of guts, and right now he's really giving them a working over. Of course, we're taking quite a few casualties, but after looking around the streets and through some of the buildings, I think we're taking care of quite a bit more Germans than they are taking care of us.
Certainly you are. And what you said for the American soldier, I'd also like to add, the leadership has a great deal to do with the way those soldiers of ours are going ahead. What is the type of resistance mainly you're hitting?
The main type of resistance right now is sniper fire, both from rifle and machine guns. We are running into some of the well-known German Panzerfaust, and we have had a few men wounded with sort of a bazooka-type weapon.
And I expect you're taking care of snipers in pretty fast order where and when you can.
Well, if we find any of them they're sniping, we don't ever see any of them back to TP.
I guess that's right, too. Are you taking many prisoners?
Not too many prisoners.
Mm-hmm. And this particular encounter here, Nuremberg, how does it compare with the resistance you've been hitting from other places?
Well, this is about the toughest resistance we've had for a long time over here.
And being the Nazi party shrine, you probably expected some of that.
That's right.
We've been hearing some of the noises in the background coming from some of the large guns, and right at the last moment when I mentioned that, we heard one of the words you might want to say.
Well, I'd just like to say hello to my wife, Jean Drive.
Well, Colonel Byrd, we're glad indeed to have had you with us. The sounds are still going on. It happens that Hitler's birthday is coming up around about this time, and I imagine that all of these folks, the Colonel and everyone with him, is hoping to present Hitler with quite a birthday present.
That's right.
And that, of course, would be the fall of Nuremberg, the taking of Nuremberg by those great American soldiers and these great leaders like Colonel Byrd. That was a visit with Colonel Edward Byrd of Des Moines, made with an Army wire recorder near where the shooting was taking place in Nuremberg. I hope you were able to hear some of those shell bursts. Next day, with an Army Hour correspondent, and in hopes I might find some other Iowans in that historic battle, I went in closer. I assure you I had Jack Shelley's helmet on pretty tight, and that I did not expose myself unnecessarily. It was a most interesting 45 minutes. From the vantage point, I could see on the other side of the wall our riflemen cautiously pushing forward, building by building. I watched tank-mounted machine guns face structures where snipers were at work, heard the pistol and explosion of incoming shells and its Nazi bazookas or mortars, and I saw flames and prisoners come out of buildings. I talked with some of those prisoners later. They were a motley lot, some of them in their early teens, others hardened SSers. If I could have had a microphone there, we could have brought the war very close to you. Two Iowans, Private First Class George Harry of Fort Madison and Private First Class Robert Carrington of Correctionville told me fascinating experiences. But they wanted me to emphasize in this broadcast they were okay and glad they could help observe Hitler's birthday by taking Nuremberg. When we left late yesterday, organized resistance had ceased. 5,000 Nazis were dead or wounded, and an equal number captured. Only occasional sniper shots and the rumble of our tanks and trucks, and the next sound you'll hear, following a few more of my own recorded remarks, broke the dead silence.
This is a new fundamental opportunity. Now, what are the things by the United States Army set up here in Muhlenberg in a rubble-strewn street? Organized resistance down in the heart of town has pretty well been subdued, although there is still some super fire in progress, and the smoke is still drifting over the burning parts of the city. Where we are, we can see devastation all about us, behind us, to the right, to the left, and in front. The net very far from Hitler's stadium, where he used to rant and rave. I see to the left of me one of the army train trucks coming in and apparently ready to give a signal to these people here, these civilians, to make way for the further activity in this country. Let's try and pick up that sound if we can. All right, I think we're ready to get it right now. Sound.
Coming from a huge mobile army loudspeaker telling the people of the fallen city to pay attention to our military government. The announcement went on to say that arrangements for food and other necessities would be made, that looting must stop, that people must stay off the streets and must cooperate. It's an eerie sound as it blares out through a smashed city. Today, things are very different than they were 4 days ago in the ancient and once beautiful German city. Amid the ruined Nazi party structures, burned out apartments, and damaged churches, libraries, and other buildings, Old Glory was raised in a brief but significant ceremony in which Colonel Byrd, George Harry, and other Iowans participated. Nuremberg is ours, not without cost, but with the knowledge that another hard step in the long march to victory has been achieved. So much for my report as a war correspondent. Now for a much more pleasant subject, agriculture and its peace and quiet, something I thought of a lot last night as we made the long trip back through the Bavarian countryside, made even more lovely by the bright moonlight on the forest-covered hillside and the beautiful cultivated farm valley. There's been little time to arrange for interviews, but I did find several soldiers close by. They're former Iowa farm boys in service for over 4 years in Africa, Italy, France, and here. But still, they often think of agriculture. So first to Tech 5, Raymond Spencer, whose folks are on a 240 near Mount Damon. He's a technician in an evacuation hospital. Ray, what have you observed in the different countries you've been in?
Their farming methods are all different and more old-fashioned than ours.
How about North Africa?
The dry country, the fields are bigger than those here. They use camels, lots of powerful machinery. The plows are mostly just part of the stick.
That's interesting. What about the other countries?
This way you had a lot of wheat, grapes, fruits, and vegetables. In Italy, we didn't have much time to watch farming in the country that we are.
With Angelo and Casanova to deal with, I know you didn't have much time for sightseeing. How about France?
Southern France was mountainous, but there were good farming in Alsace and Lorraine, and here in Germany, they had some pretty good productive crops.
Thank you, Ray Spencer. And now, Staff Sergeant John Hopkins of near Algona, where his folks are on a farm. Sergeant, what are some of the things you noticed as you drive trucks and jeeps through Germany?
Well, they have small patches of land. I guess the idea is that they have good rotation and moisture saving program works out with these smashed trips. Other things I noticed is a funny power combination. Sometimes it's just one horse or a yoke of oxen. Sometimes they have as many as 6 oxen. And then again, it's a cow and a horse together. I think that's an insult to a horse.
You wouldn't want to farm that way.
No, I should say not. Give me a good little pasture and fine herds and horses and possibly see back home. And I hope we see them for another 4 years.
We can understand that. A few words now from still another former Iowa farmer, Sergeant William Hornbeck of Logan, also with the 11th Evac Hospital. Sergeant, how do you think the farming deal compares with home?
Don't so long since I saw farming in the States, I've almost forgotten. I do have plenty you showed me was the first we have found in 3 years. The farming here is only small scale, and I think it's been neglected. But they have some good land, and the country looks pretty clean and good for farming. The way factories have been bombed out, the Germans will probably have to turn to a lot of farming.
Thank you. Sergeant Hornbeck. It looks as though our time is sort of getting away from us. We didn't have much time to prepare these things, but we do have another wire-recorded feature from another man in the Rainbow Division, also participating in the Battle of Nuremberg. Last Sunday, one of the Rainbow Division men on our program, Alan Hagen, promised us a few GI farm observations as made while with the field artillery battery through France and now deep in Germany. Private Hagen was formerly vocation ag instructor at Sigourney and Emmitsburg, and before entering service was county extension director in Mitchell County, where his wife and youngsters now live. Well, with your gun, and while in those clover field foxholes, have a good chance to see farming here in the old country. Give us your observations.
Well, Herb, one thing I've noticed so much of is the absence of a corn hog type of farming. In fact, that ear of corn you brought me the other day was really a definite treasure because I haven't seen much of it over here. Of course, I've recognized the old-fashioned method used here. Many yokes of oxen doing the plowing and doing the farm work. Maybe women leading a horse around with the husband behind it on some implement. Old machinery, much of it hand-powered, and especially their haymaking and things like that are done involving much hand-power.
Well, Al, do you feel that with what they have to work with here, that they do all right?
I feel that they are very conservative. They certainly utilize every inch of land around here. They have their own little water control system, shall we say, with handmade ditches, very straight. The water is very definitely controlled, and I see no evidence of soil erosion.
And in regard to the farmsteads, Al, that interested me quite a lot.